Welcome to the Real Life English Podcast, where we help dedicated English learners just like you cultivate the courage, the confidence, and the skills that you need to understand real life native English, to communicate clearly with people from all around the world, and to make your life an epic global adventure. Now, are you ready to go beyond the classroom and start living your English? Can I get an aw yeah?
Oh yeah, boys and girls, citizens of the world, this is Thiago from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, convenient, and
metamorphic
way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to it while you're grocery shopping, strolling at the park, or even
working on your skills at making some Sichuan spicy chicken.
Wow. Ethan, you used some nice words there, man. I mean, what did you say again?
Sichuan spicy chicken.
Wow. Could you define that, please?
Sichuan is a place in China that is famous for having very spicy food. So at least in the States, if you go to Chinese restaurants often, you'll have like Sichuan such and such recipe that is when you want something that's got a kick to it.
Cool. And that's why we call you Mr. V, right? Actually, this nickname for me is new because I've only recently learned that one of your nicknames is Mr. V. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be worth explaining to the audience here, those who don't know, what Mr. V stands for and where this nickname came from, Mr. V.
Mr. V stands for, it's short for, I guess we'd say, Mr. Vocabulary. And I guess I got famous in the early days of this podcast. Anyone who's an old fan, that won't be new for, because I used to use maybe more advanced vocabulary, or I'd use a lot of expressions, which is deliberate because, you know, trying to sneak in some different things that we can teach, but it stuck. That name stuck. I think maybe Chad, who used to do the podcast with us, gave me that nickname and it stuck.
That's a cool nickname. It sounds like a superhero, Mr. V. So I'm joined in the global studio today, first and foremost, by the one and only Mr. V himself, Ethan. Hey, Ethan, how's it going?
How you going?
I'm good.
We're kind of turning the tables here today, huh?
Yeah. We invert the roles a little bit today, yeah? So it's a nice experiment.
So I can kind of like lay back, relax here, and just enjoy the flow of the podcast.
Exactly. Just enjoy the talk. Yeah. And of course, I got to mention here the most lekker teacher in all South Africa, who's also joining us today, the one and only Kase. Hey, Kase.
Hey, guys.
Are you in the mood for some spicy chicken, Kase?
I don't actually do well with spicy food. So I tend to go for milder options. So something a little spicy.
You don't like the kick?
I don't like a kick. No, thanks.
That is actually really cool to define. I mean, you don't like the kick. What does kick mean in that context of spicy food?
If something has a kick to it, it's not just spicy, but it's something that has a strong flavor in general. So you could also hear someone describe, for example, maybe a scotch or any sort of alcoholic drink that you can really feel the alcohol is like, ooh, that's got a kick to it. You know, it's strong.
And Kase, you do have some big news to share with us today, don't you?
I do, indeed.
So just to tease the listeners a little bit, we're going to get into it more in today's episode, but could you just briefly share your big news with everybody?
Sure. So I've recently made the decision to accept a job offer in China. So I'll be teaching young kids and teens in China.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations. Yeah. And I imagine that it takes a lot of courage also, to make such a big change in our life like that. Because, you know, dear listeners, sometimes all you need in life is a great adventure. So today we're going to be talking about moving to a country where you don't know the language, also taking a job opportunity abroad, and how all of that connects to your identity. Kase, I have to say that I know very little about Chinese culture. We do use a lot of products from China here in Brazil, And it's even common for us to see that famous line on the products, made in China. Yeah, but I know very little about it. So personally, I'm excited about today's episode because I know that you have been learning more about the country, the culture, and you have some cool things to share with us today. So I'm excited about that. But first of all, I would like to ask you, Cassie, what inspired you to take this opportunity to move to China? What is your deeper intrinsic motivator in this case?
I would say that for me, there are multiple reasons. I think when we make decisions like this, there's always a multitude of reasons to do or not to do something. And in my case, I think the strongest push that I've had is that this opportunity fulfills two sides of who I am. On the one end, I'm a mom, and this opportunity will afford me and my family to have a better life for many reasons, of course, financially, just in general, like the cultural experience, to learn more, to grow more. But also, it's sort of fulfilling a lifelong dream that I've had, which was to be able to travel, to be able to work abroad, and to be able to sort of link it to, I would say, my somewhat altruistic nature, which is to help and sort of be of value in the world. And I think I thought that I could find that with journalism, but teaching offered so much more, like so much more fulfillment. And I think being physically in China, teaching in person, definitely fills that. And I think it's going to be wonderful for that reason. And, you know, Chiago, as parents, as a parent yourself, I would say that, you know, when we think about making decisions, the reason I mentioned my family first is because once you become a parent, I think every decision you make is linked to your kid. You're thinking like 10 moves ahead if this was a chessboard. You're like, you know, whatever I do will affect him, will affect his life, his future. So I felt a sort of aha moment when this opportunity came, because I felt that I would be able to, it ties in with my identity and hopefully what I can offer him as well. So this was really my strong motivation.
You did mention a nice word there, which was altruistic. Could you define that?
Sure. So if you tend to be more altruistic, you're someone who your desire to help others sort of outweighs or trumps your desire to, you know, for personal gain. So I tend to always want to help, always want to add value to others in whatever way I can.
You mentioned an aha moment there. What is that?
An aha moment is a moment of sometimes profound realization, where things just start to make sense. We also say like things start to fall into place, like the reason starts to make sense.
That's incredible. Yeah.
It's a bittersweet moment, of course. I think that I should add, because it's not like I'm like, yeah, bye guys. Like I definitely, it comes with its negative, negative side as well.
Mr. V, I got to ask you, Cassie just used a very nice word there. Yeah. Bittersweet. She says, this experience is bittersweet. What does that mean?
It's like bittersweet chocolate, for example, right? We say this as a flavor of something that has both those notes of bitterness and sweetness. But then we can use it in a more figurative sense, just like Kase did here, to talk about something that has both sweet aspects to it or positive aspects and negative, or could be not necessarily negative, but in this case, I'm sure Kase is referencing you have to leave your family, maybe you have anxiety related to this big change going on in your life. So it has some more tumultuous or more complicated emotions that come along with it, not just all sweet or positive notes, right?
And Cassie, I totally relate to what you're saying about being a parent and wanting the best for your child. And it's true, yeah, we tend to have a vision for our children, I guess, yeah, as parents. And we start making decisions in the present moment, keeping that vision in mind. So yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. Kansei, one last question I have about this is, would you say that this desire to live abroad and work abroad is something that has been on the back burner for you for a while? Has been on the back burner?
It sure has. But before I get into that, what does it mean?
Oh, I'm going to throw it to Mr. V again. Ethan, please define for us when something is on the back burner.
Mm-hmm. This comes from, for example, if you have a stove, maybe you put something on the back burner that you just need to simmer. You just need it to be kind of warming and stuff while you're cooking other things. And then when we use it in a figurative sense, as Thiago did here, it means that you're not prioritizing something right now. You're thinking, someday I'll do that thing, but you have other priorities in your life that you're doing first.
So that's exactly it. This decision has been, or this desire has been placed on the back burner. Simmer over there. But, you know, like I said, being a parent, you know, having a job, and we grow up and we sort of think that the time's passed. I should give up on that. And whether it's learning a language or pursuing any other kind of goal, it's never too late.
By the way, dear listeners, in case you don't know, we do have the Real Life English app, and we highly recommend you download it because you can listen to this week's episode while following an interactive transcript. So you can read along everything that we are saying here. All right. So in case you haven't downloaded the app yet, make sure you go to your favorite app store, Google Play Store or App Store, search for Real Life English. And also, I'm going to leave the link here in the description in case you are watching us on YouTube. So do check it out. All right. Now, Ethan, on to you. You know, one thing that I admire about you is the fact that you are a very well-traveled person. You have been to many places in the world, many countries, and I think that gives you this more, let's say, broad perspective of things, of different cultures, different countries. So I know that you have been around a lot, but I wanted to ask you specifically about your experience moving to Brazil. I know that you moved to Brazil in the past, and not even once, but twice, I believe. So I'm curious to learn more about how the experience went for you, starting with your motivation. What motivated you to leave the US and come to Brazil at that time? Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to be brief. I was fortunate to get to live in, while I was in university, to live a year in Spain, in Mallorca. And while I was there, I made some Brazilian friends. And this was, I believe, the first time I met Brazilians. And I'd hear them speaking to each other in Portuguese, and I was just like, wow, what a beautiful language. And, you know, I got to know them and got closer to them and just found the place that they came from, the culture, so fascinating. And that was kind of, it just piqued my curiosity. I started learning a little bit of Portuguese from them, and I even downloaded Rosetta Stone and did some Portuguese while I was living there. And then coincidentally, I went back to the States because I had my brother was getting married. So we had his wedding, and a bunch of my family flew out to Colorado. And I just remember that we were sitting down at lunch, you know, before the actual wedding with all of my mom's family. And coincidentally, I had a cousin. She and her husband had just gotten back from living in Recife, Brazil for, I think it was 6 months or something, for several months they were there. And they were talking all about their experience and everything and how life-changing it was. And those things kind of connected in my head. And there was just a spark, maybe an aha moment, like Hase said earlier. And I was like, you know, when I finish university, I'm going to move to Brazil. I just decided in that moment. And sure enough, I finished my senior year of university. And, you know, it was summer. I got a job. I was saving up money and everything. And I had this plan to move to Brazil. And I was applying for jobs. I didn't hear anything because, you know, I was fresh out of university. I didn't have any relevant prior experience. And also, in general, it's kind of difficult because you're competing with local people. They'd have to pay for a visa for me and whatnot. So I said, you know, I can teach English. You know, I've learned languages myself. I had some experience tutoring English in when I was living in Spain. And so I did the TEFL exam, which I felt like it didn't prepare me at all for the realities of the classroom once I got there, but it's okay. And I also was really proactive about researching, trying to look up other English teachers from the States that were teaching specifically where I was planning to go, where I had some friends in Belo Horizonte. So I went. I was a few days in Rio first because, you know, you got to go to Rio, and Rio's a really spectacular city. And then after a few days, you know, I was couch surfing there. After a few days, I went to Bagai, couch surfed with a guy there as well. And, you know, eventually was finding an apartment. But when I was doing my research before going in Belo Horizonte, I found one teacher. I found a woman. She referred me to these real life English guys. She's like, oh, you should write them. You know, they do these events and stuff. They're like, they really know what they're doing about teaching in Beaga. So I reached out to them, and that's how actually I met Justin. And when I went there, I went over to their place and everything. And, you know, we hung out in person. I started going to the parties. I'd get there early and help them. And then after, you know, because I just found this to be the most amazing thing. Just in Belo Horizonte, there's not a lot of foreigners. So it was like a room full of Brazilians all speaking English. It's pretty, pretty mind blowing. And, you know, I'd stay late and help them to, you know, kind of clean things up, tidy things up after. And yeah. And then eventually, because I was always there helping and everything, they just asked me if I wanted to join. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. But if people want to learn more about just kind of that journey and how we got started with real life English, having a tongue twister, then you can listen to, we'll link in the description or in the show notes as well, past episode where Justin and I talk all about that.
Ethan, you mentioned the TEFL certificate. In preparing to come to Brazil, you took a TEFL certificate. Maybe some listeners might not know what that means. What kind of certificate is that, the TEFL?
Yeah, so it's for, I believe it's specifically for native English speakers, but it's teaching English as a foreign language certificate. And basically, I believe Kase is actually doing this now, so it's been a very long time that I did this, so she can probably give the details a little bit better than I can. But basically, they give you some preparation for being in a classroom and teaching. Like, you don't even have to have prior, like, a degree in teaching to do it. So it kind of gives you an introduction to teaching and specifically to helping people learn English. But like I said, for my experience, at least, once I got into the actual classroom, you know, I just realized that I really, really was, we could say, naive at this whole teaching thing.
And well, you didn't see much validity or practicality maybe in the course. Mm-hmm. Would you say that you were bored to tears in some of the lessons there, some classes?
Yeah, I'd say that would be a valid description, that I was bored to tears.
That means you'd be really bored.
Yeah, if you imagine you're so bored, you're crying.
Can I say, still talking about your preparation now, to move to China, I do have a question about that. But before I ask you that question, what country would you like to move to one day, guys? You know, have you thought about that? If you could live anywhere in the world, where would you like to go and why? Share your comment here in the comment section below, because we are curious to see, I mean, your destinations. Where would you like to go?
Or if you're just listening to the audio, you can write us at hello@reallifeglobal.com.
So Kansei, talking about your preparation now, in moving. So how have you been preparing to move to China? What kinds of things have you been learning about, studying, doing?
Mm-hmm. Well, as Ethan mentioned, I actually did the TEFL course 4 or 5 years ago when I started teaching online. And I've never taught in a classroom, but that course is focused on how to teach in a classroom. So it teaches classroom management and things like that, which is new to me. And because I didn't use those skills, I'm doing it now, as Ethan said, because it'll be my first time as a classroom teacher, which is so scary. And of course, there's a lot of paperwork to take care of. Bureaucracy, of course, involved in applying for the visa, the clearance checks, like certifying my qualifications and things like that. But that's the boring stuff. Then there's the fun things, like getting to know more about Chinese culture, the language, the myths, the stereotypes, the things that people say about the country that, I mean, there's one thing to ignore things like that and be uninformed completely. And there's another thing, like, on the other hand, what I've been doing is reading all about it and really just like looking at both sides, because I'm pretty sure a lot of it is just made up nonsense that people who've never been to China probably just have to say about the country. So I've been reading a lot of blogs and vlogs, people who've lived there from different countries. But I have been focusing on South Africans who have taught in China and, you know, who have shared their experiences relocating with their families. That's the bigger part. Like if I was going by myself, adventure time. But I'm bringing along a little kid. So I did a lot of research with regards to schools and options for childcare. And of course, I've started learning Chinese as well, Mandarin. Yeah, which is so daunting. Like 1 month ago, I was so excited about Portuguese. I was seeing growth. And now I've just like, it can wait.
Aside,
so
put it on the back burner.
Yeah, pushed it to the side. Put it on the back burner.
There you go.
What does daunting mean, Cassie?
Yeah, so if something is daunting, it's sort of scary because it's, you don't know. There's uncertainty involved. There's perhaps risks, usually risks, and you're not sure how things are going to turn out. So it's daunting.
And have you started looking into accommodations there, Cassie?
Yes. So they will pay for the hotel for 2 weeks. So I'll stay in a hotel for 2 weeks, and then they will help me find accommodation. So the first month will just be me settling in, and yeah. They'll basically guide me through all the basic essential things, opening a bank account, familiarizing myself, getting a Chinese SIM card, because as you know, we cannot use our, you know, WhatsApp and other things like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
You used some nice phrasal verbs there. You said they sort everything out and you said that they help you to settle in. So what do those two phrasal verbs mean?
Yeah, so to sort something out is to make arrangements for. So they take care of the arrangements. They sort everything out so that I don't have to.
Nice. Mm.
And to settle in means to, I always think of it as like a drink, a pretty drink, where there's like still pulp or something and it starts to settle at the bottom of the glass. I don't know. So this is what it means. Like when you settle in, you're finding your place in a bigger space. So you're finding where you belong. And if you think of moving and you settle in, you really get comfortable. You make it your home.
And speaking of home, Ethan, what about you? I mean, in terms of accommodation, where did you stay when you came to Brazil? Did you rent a place? Did you share a room with someone?
I had several different experiences there. When I first got there, I lived with three roommates. And after a few months, I was paying quite a bit of money. I realized later by Brazilian standards and with what I was making, it didn't make that much sense to spend that much of my salary on that. So I ended up, I was gone to the States for a month for Christmas. And when I came back, I moved into a, what's called in Brazil, a república, which does not exist in the States, that concept. But I lived with like eight guys in downtown Belo Horizonte. Very crazy experience. So it was like seven Brazilians and one Italian guy and myself. And I had the maid's closet. So in my tiny little room fit a mattress, a, what do you call it? An armoire or like a dresser and a meditation cushion behind the door so I could like meditate and that's it. And just enough room for the door to open and close. That was it. That was the entire room.
Actually, you did share with us the other day a movie that reminds you of that experience of sharing the apartment with, you know, other Brazilian friends. And there's also, I guess, an Italian guy you said.
Right.
Right. Could you tell us a little bit about that movie that you shared?
Yeah, that one, I'd say it reminds me even more of my experience having lived in Mallorca, for example, when I was studying, or in Barcelona. It's called L'Auberge Espagnole. It's a French movie. I probably butchered the pronunciation, but it means the Spanish apartment. And it's actually about a French guy who goes on Erasmus. Erasmus is a program that they have in Europe, which is exchange between universities. So he goes on Erasmus on an exchange program to live in Barcelona. And he's hunting for apartments, for a place to live. And he goes to this place that has we'll watch this scene together. But he goes to this place that's really cool because it's a mix of all sorts of different nationalities living there in the same small quarters, you know? And I've had many experiences like this where when I was living in Mallorca, I lived with two Spanish guys and one British guy, and we spent a lot of time with the Erasmus students. So, you know, we'd be having like a party and there'd be people from all over Europe and even from different parts of the world, you know, like I had my Brazilian friends and other people. So I love this movie because it really reminds me so much of being in that kind of environment. That's just a melting pot of different cultures and accents and stuff, you know, and speaking Spanish and English and other languages. A lot of times what happens when you move to another place, in fact, is it's easier to make friends with other people who have also moved there than it is with the locals because you're in the same boat, right? And you feel that empathy of a shared experience.
That sounds fun and multicultural. By the way, we actually have a clip from that movie, Ethan. So I'm going to ask our producer, Ice-T, to roll it now, and let's check it out.
Yes. You see, the rent is not so cheap, so we have to be a lot, so it becomes much more cheaper. But we have to organize things, so it becomes possible for everybody. You see?
Yes, yes.
Okay, now I have some questions, Xavier. What are you studying?
Economy.
Oh, economy.
Oh. And what do you expect your life to be in about 5 years?
That's a ridiculous question. You can't ask
why?
Me that.
We have to know.
I don't know what I'm going to be doing.
Listen,
in five
years. This is a very normal question. Yeah? I have a list of questions, and anybody don't like my question or want to ask another question, then go on.
Seriously, we have to know him or not.
What does it matter?
I thought it's funny that they're interviewing him, like a job interview almost. Yeah? But the environment is so casual. It's so cool, you know?
Yeah, they talk about there's one girl who's like local. That's it. The only person who's actually, she's from Tarragona. And I think there's a German, a Danish guy, an Italian. The girl is British. There's another guy, I think, who's British, and he also speaks French. And so it's and the guy who's interviewing is, and the main character of the movie is French. So it's such a cool sort of environment to be in where people all have these different, they're coming from these very different experiences in life, right?
Ethan, do you have any comments about the character's English there in the clip? What could you say about their English?
I think one of the really interesting things about this is we hear many different Englishes and levels of English. And I'm sure even some of you listeners might've heard them making some mistakes, some of the characters. But despite that, none of them have any problem, and us watching it have no problem understanding what they're trying to communicate, right? Even though some of the questions are a bit funny, right? I noticed at the beginning, I think the guy is Danish or German, the one who's kind of the head interviewer, we could say. And he says the rent, we have to be many so that the rent becomes much more cheaper. So it's kind of infamous in downtown Barcelona, the apartments can be a bit expensive. If you're a student, you don't tend to have a lot of money. So this is a common situation, right?
It has also to do with the comparative, right? Because the word cheap is only one syllable long. So we tend to just add ER for comparative there, yeah?
Right.
We tend to use more for like longer words, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you could actually, you're right. If you said like beautiful, it's much more beautiful. Then that's correct.
There you go. But Cassie, don't feel left out because I actually have a clip for you as well. And it is about China. But before we actually watch that, you know, I thought it would be cool to do exactly what I do with my students, which is to try to get you to predict what the video is going to be about. Yeah, it's a couple. They're talking about China specifically. And I have some words here that they mention in the clip. So they mention reminiscent, stab, and curse in the clip. Okay? So before you predict, could you define the word reminiscent to our listeners here?
So if something is reminiscent, it reminds you of something or someone, an event. So you can say today is reminiscent of the first time I did something. I don't know, whatever it is.
And Ethan, what does it mean to stab something?
It can have a violent sort of connotation, right? Of someone stabbing someone with a knife, that if you see any like criminal drama or something like that, or it happens in real life as well. But we can also say, you know, to stab something, like if you stab a tomato with your fork, it's like you're kind of forcefully grabbing that tomato off of your plate with your fork. So it's like, has to do with a penetration, right?
Right. And finally, curse. How would you define curse, Cassie?
So a curse is bad wishes. Mm. You know, if someone wishes bad on someone else, they're generally cursing that person. But curse can also mean to swear, like a swear word. Mm-hmm. So, but I think you would use that word, obviously, in different contexts. But don't you say cuss in American English?
We can say both. We can say curse, but you can say cuss or swear.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
But Cassie, looking at these words, reminiscence, stab, and curse, what do you think the clip is going to be about? Any ideas?
Someone is trying to, they're describing a new experience and thinking about and comparing it to a previous experience that they had. Mm. So like they're experiencing something new and they're comparing to something. Maybe they're using stab in the context of like, take a stab at something, like trying something for the first time. Curse. Curse of knowledge. I'm trying to think of positive ways that they might use this word. Or maybe curse in like swearing, like don't curse here.
You're hoping it's not like don't curse or else you're going to get stabbed, you know.
Great job with the predictions. I'm going to ask our producer again, Ice-T, to roll the clip and let's check it out.
Number three, chopsticks.
Chopsticks are the primary eating utensil here in China, and there's a couple things you need to remember about what not to do with them. The first thing is, don't put chopsticks in a bowl of rice with them sticking up, right?
Normally, if we visit our ancestors' graves, there were three bowls of rice in front of us. We will stick the chopstick on top of it. So if you're eating with your Chinese friend, do not do that. They're not going to appreciate that.
So it's kind of reminiscent of when you visit your dead relatives in the graves.
Yes.
Okay, I can see why that's
bad. You don't want to curse them.
Also, you never want to take your chopsticks and point it at someone, okay? I imagine in the West it's kind of rude to do that with your fork, but it's much more serious here. You wouldn't want to point at anyone with your chopsticks.
Yes. And some of the rude people, like we are talking about the rude people, sometimes they were just using the chopsticks like, I think it's like this. That's really, really scary to do that.
If you can't use chopsticks, you might have a difficult time here in China because they're used everywhere. However, you are never to stab food with the chopsticks. The whole point of chopsticks is that they were a non-violent alternative to other eating utensils in history. Mm. So if you're stabbing your food with it because you can't pick it up, that's probably a no-no.
So how are your chopstick skills, Cassie? I'm itching to know now.
They're pretty good.
So Cassie, any comments on the clip?
That was quite funny. I found it funny because I actually read about some of this. So I knew about the chopstick no-no. Yeah, I knew about that one. And pointing them at people, I also read that. And even with your fingers, I heard that you shouldn't point at people. With your fingers either. You rather gesture with your palm.
Interesting.
So it's over there instead of over there. Or you.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Wow. Very interesting.
Still on that subject, have you learned any other cultural do's or don'ts?
I have. Chinese culture is very reserved. So I heard things like public displays of affection, or just general like loud laughing or being angry in public. I mean, sometimes you're so angry like, oh man, I think I have to mute these behaviors. I don't think I'll ever stop, but I could learn to mute them.
Ethan, there's some nice connected speech also in this clip we just saw, yeah? Could you point some of the connected speech patterns there that we heard?
Yeah, I noticed that. So he says bowl of rice. He doesn't say it that way. He says a bowl of rice or a bowl of rice. I'm not sure exactly how he said it, but you would hear often Americans say it both those ways, bowl of rice or bowl of rice, bowl of something. There was another one too. He said in front of us. This is a really good one because it's got several elements of connected speech. We'd say in front of us. So you have the NT in front. We drop the T sound, the N connects to the of, which becomes a schwa sound, in front of, and the v at the end of connects to us, in front of us. And then finally, the last one that I took note of is if you pick something up with your chopsticks, so he said, pick it up. You have an American T there, and all three of those words really link together, pick it up.
You know, listening to Kasey sharing some of these cultural, you know, differences, right? And also this clip, it really reminds us of the importance of getting to know other cultures, yeah, and expanding our worldview, our perspective of the world. And it just so happens that you can do that with our app as well. From the comfort of your native country, actually, you can connect with people from all over the world, have a nice short conversation, and get to know more about that person's country, culture, habits, traditions. So it's really, really cool. Speaking of the app, we do have some shout outs today here to some of our followers. So let's get into it.
So Jubair says, the live speaking feature on the Real Life English app is simply amazing. It's a fantastic way to practice speaking with other learners and speakers of English from around the world. Overall, I would highly recommend the Real Life English app to anyone looking to improve their English skills. It's a comprehensive, effective, and enjoyable way to learn, and the community aspect makes it feel like a truly collaborative and supportive experience. Thank you, Jubair. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jubair, for the awesome review and the testimonial. We really appreciate it. And your listener, come on, give it a try. Download the app. It's free to download, and I'm sure you're going to like it just like Jubair. All right, so now it's time for the real life way moment of the episode. And I would have to say that a component that connects with today's talk is definitely connected. Ethan, what could you say about connecting your English to this topic that we are discussing today about traveling and moving abroad?
Well, I'll talk first of all about the part about connecting it to your why, because for me, that's been such a huge part of the reason why I decided to live abroad in several different countries. And one of the big things for me is that native speakers of English don't really have to learn other languages to be able to travel and live abroad. I've met a lot of Brits or Americans that live here in Barcelona, and they don't speak Spanish. They find ways to get by with the locals and stuff without knowing the language, but they live here, they don't speak the language. And this for me defeats the whole purpose, you know, of going to live in another country. For me, it's all about getting to experience, as I mentioned earlier, a different worldview. And you really only get this when you learn the language, when you can speak to people in their language. And there's a quote from Nelson Mandela, who's from Kasey's stomping grounds. And he says, if you talk to a man in a language he understands, that goes to his head. If you talk to him in his language, that goes to his heart. Now, I'm not sure, maybe Kasey could fill us in why he said this. Maybe I believe that in South Africa, there's many different languages. So maybe that was a goal he had, was to be able to speak with different people from the country in their own language. I'm not sure exactly why, but there's a lot of wisdom in that quote. And I'd say for me, living abroad has just been an eye-opening experience, because it allowed me to really see what my life would have been like had I grown up in Germany, or had I grown up in Spain, had I grown up in Brazil, for example, and to have so much gratitude, you know, just for where I came from, the opportunity that I was given, and also to experience different ways of seeing the world, mm-hmm. because there's no one correct way. And I grabbed another quote because I think this also goes really to the heart of what I'm saying, the whole why of living abroad, or if you can't live abroad, finding ways to connect with people from other parts of the world. It's really the highest purpose, the highest thing you can use your English for, is as a tool to get to know all these different cultures and develop yourself into a global citizen. And it comes from Seneca, who was a philosopher. And he said, I'm not born for one corner. The whole world is my native land. And this experience of traveling, it really gave me this feeling. I had started with kind of a, what we may call Wanderlust, which is, it's a word from German that means love of traveling, a love of getting to see different places and wandering. But it started to give me this feeling, you know, that I, just because I was born in the States, it doesn't just mean that I'm American. It means that I can I can grab different identities, which Kase is going to, I'll let Kase talk about, but I can meld into these different identities and everything and become this global citizen. I can become someone who belongs anywhere. Kase, I'm curious to hear what you have to say about the other element in Connected, which is identity.
Yeah, but before I tell you a bit about identity, I really just want to comment on the Nelson Mandela quote and why it's so powerful is because of his way of thinking, because of that that belief that he had and that understanding that he had, you know, with, you know, how the power of language, the power of learning to connect with people using their language. It had to do more with, I mean, anyone who might understand the South African history and apartheid and like racial segregation and oppression. If you're interested in that, I recommend you you definitely check out the many Mandela movies out there. But he used it as a way to unite the country. And I mean, it was horrible. You know, there's a horrible history, which we won't get into, but the power of that quote is it rings true, I think, for every South African, everyone who understands how, I mean, we have neighbors here. I have neighbors who live next door, people I went to school with, and they speak languages that I don't understand. So, you know, I ever truly understand them? I think when we talk about how travel connects with identity or how it connects with who we actually are, we have to think about how we see ourselves in the future. So how do I see myself? And if I can sort of envision myself as a person who speaks Chinese, speaks Mandarin, makes new friends from different countries, you know, gets to know different places, explores, you know, new and unknown foods and ways of life. I think once you can envision yourself as something, you can really change your life. I think it works with languages, especially. I think when you really feel that connection to the languages, Ethan mentioned connection with people. But I mean, we can feel that with a lot of different things. It could be your job, your desire to improve in whatever area of your life. I think when you feel that that thing connects with you, when you can see yourself being successful at it, when you can see how it will improve, how your future will be better, I think the action follows. I think when it comes to identity, it's those things. And for me, it was really this idea of traveling and seeing myself, seeing my family, seeing my son, you know, just envisioning this better future, the possibilities that this opportunity will afford me or could afford me. I think, yeah, it's really just filling me with like the motivation to keep going, keep learning. And it's worth it at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. That's what I keep reminding myself of. So
I really like what you were saying there too about the connecting it isn't just to people. That's totally been my experience as well with especially as I've developed as a language learner and gotten different skills. For a while I was learning French, for example, and something that was really, I've never lived in France, but something that really helped me was really connecting to the culture, to the cooking for a while. Like I was really obsessed with French cooking and French wines and connecting to the music, you know? And so it's like, you can create this whole environment where you're listening to French music, you're listening to some Edith Piaf while you're throwing together a bouffe bourguignon, what's it called? Bouffe bourguignon? No, I'm forgetting the name of the plate, but whatever. You're throwing together, you know, a French dish and, you know, enjoying that even with other people. So you can kind of create your own immersion experience.
Yeah, that's certainly what I did when I was learning English, creating my own immersion experience. But, you know, listening to you guys now talking about that, it makes me want to travel now and move abroad. That is so amazing and inspiring. But just a word here to the listeners, maybe you don't have the time in the moment or even the money to do this, to travel abroad, to live abroad, it's okay. But use the app. The app is an amazing place for you to connect with other people from different countries. Think about it as a virtual travel. You know, you are traveling virtually via the app by connecting to different cultures. And we actually have a challenge for you today. And the challenge is, first, go to the app and download it in case you haven't done it yet, and learn about someone else's culture. Maybe ask that person, hey, what is it like to live there where you're from, and tell me more about your country, your culture, and then maybe share one thing one insight that you learned, one cool thing that you learned from a different culture. You can share that here in the comment section below, or you can just drop us a line at hello@reallifeglobal.com. We are looking forward to hearing your insights and learnings. All right. So that's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for next week's episode, and we'll talk to you soon. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Hey again, I hope you enjoyed today's lesson. Don't be a stranger. You can find all the notes like vocabulary, links, and more for this lesson on our blog at reallifeglobal.com. And connect with us and on Instagram at reallife.english for even more fun English recommendations. Do you want to continue your learning and get confident, fluent English? Check out our YouTube channel, Learn English with TV Series, where you can have fun learning to understand fast-speaking natives with your favorite movies, series, and more without getting lost, without missing the jokes, and without subtitles. Finally, if you are enjoying our podcast, then please assist us in helping more people go beyond the classroom and live their English. You can do this by sending a link to this podcast to a friend or by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you are listening. We might even shout you out on the podcast. Stay healthy and safe, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Aw, yeah.